Well, welcome everybody here today to Melbourne Harbour Rumo Inn. What a time it is, and just wanted to know, is anybody here for the first time? Very first time, anybody? John, welcome. Welcome, thank you. Contestant I have chosen today is basically the subject of how we relate to God, how we reciprocate with God. So it's chapter 4, text 11, and I'll just change it and read the translation and then the good book which the Pope has written. As all surrender unto me, I reward them accordingly. Everyone follows my path in all respects of salvation. Everyone is searching for Krishna in the different aspects of his manifestations. Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is partially realized in his impersonal Brahma-jyoti effulgence and as the all-pervading super-soul dwelling within everything, including the particles of atoms. But Krishna is fully realized only by his pure devotees. Consequently, Krishna is the object of everyone's realization, and thus anyone and everyone is satisfied according to one's desire to have him. Just make a comment here. What Prabhupada is talking about is that we're all looking for happiness. And basically speaking, the only place where we can really find happiness is where we have our origin, and that is with God. We were created by God to be happy. He didn't create us to be miserable. And so therefore, Prabhupada is saying here that everyone is searching for Krishna, but they're going to be searching for happiness, and their true happiness lies with God, lies in serving God, in being in a relationship with God, in being in the association with God. And because they're searching for happiness, they're looking for happiness in everything they do. And but they're not aware really what they're looking for. They're not really aware that they're really looking for themselves, who they really are, themselves as spiritual beings, as the devotees of God. So we look and look at all different aspects, and we get exactly what we're looking for. That's what Krishna is saying here. In the transcendental world also, Krishna reciprocates with his pure devotees in the transcendental attitude, just as the devotee wants him. One devotee may want Krishna as supreme master, another one as his personal friend, another as his son, and still another as his lover. Krishna rewards all the devotees equally, according to their different intensities of love for him. In the material world, the same reciprocations of feelings are also there, and they are equally exchanged by the Lord with the different types of worshippers. The pure devotees, both here and in the transcendental abode, associate with him in person, and are able to render personal devotional service to him, and thus derive transcendental bliss in loving service. As for those who are impersonalists and who want to commit spiritual suicide by annihilating the individual existence of the living entity, Krishna helps them also by absorbing them into his effulgence. So basically, whatever you desire, Krishna will give it to you. Such impersonalists do not agree to accept the eternal, blissful personality of Godhead. Consequently, they cannot relish the bliss of transcendental personal service to the Lord, having extinguished their individuality. Some of them, who are not firmly situated even in the impersonal existence, return to this material field to exhibit their dormant desires for activities. So they try to be impersonal, and Krishna actually grants their desires. But those people who are not those individuals who are not firmly fixed on having totally denied their own existence as an individual, those people are not firmly situated in that understanding of, actually I don't exist. They still have some desires, there's some personal activity. So they come back to this plane of existence where they have to relate with people and do things. They are not admitted into spiritual planets, but they are again given a chance at some material planets. For those who are perfect workers, the Lord awards the desired results of their prescribed duties, as the Yageshwar. And those who are yogis, seeking mystic powers, are awarded such powers. In other words, everyone is dependent for success upon his mercy, alone. And all kinds of spiritual processes have a different degrees of success in the same path. Unless, therefore, one comes to the highest perfection of Krishna consciousness, all attempts remain imperfect, as is stated in Srimad Bhagavatam. Canto 2, Chapter 3, Text 10. Akama Sarah Kamarava, Loksha Kama Mudavadi, Tivrena Bhakti Yogena, Yadetana Purushambhara. Whether one is without desire, the condition of devotees, or is desirous of all fruit of results, or if one is after liberation, one should with all efforts try to worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead for complete perfection, culminating in Krishna consciousness. So, to quote the first master in my own language, this verse, Krishna makes a spectacular statement. What Krishna is saying here, never mind, is that every act that anybody could possibly perform is some type of reciprocation with God, Krishna himself. And the realized souls actually know this. And we know this from chapter 7 of Bhagavad Gita, where it says that the realized souls who've gone through many, many births and deaths have become gyanavans, individuals who are full of knowledge. And because of their knowledge and understanding, that Vasudeva Sarvam, Vasudeva Krishna is everything. Now, how do they understand that Krishna is everything? It's not that they think, that the table and the spoon and the petula is Krishna. It's not like that. They understand that Krishna is everything because Krishna encompasses everything. Arjuna said this to Krishna. After Krishna reveals in his universal form, then Arjuna really understood that, oh Krishna, you encompass everything. Everything is actually within you, within your creation. So because of that, you are everything. Krishna expands himself. So it's Krishna, Krishna's energy, Krishna's creation. And we are within that creation. So in that way, Krishna is everything. And so therefore we understand that nothing is not in relationship with God, number one. And everything is operating within God's intention for us. So we can understand this from the word here in this verse that has been translated as surrender. The word that's been translated as surrender here is prapadyante. And if you dissect this word, then pad means to go, just like pada is feet. It's what you use to go somewhere with. And that's also what you stand on. So it's like, that's where you stand in relation to God, in relationship with God. And the prefix that is used here is pra, which means something like going forth, moving towards something. So literally speaking, it's like everyone is presenting themselves to me, that's how I reciprocate with them. And at every moment we are presenting ourselves to God. And the question is how? When I'm driving the bus, when I'm riding the garden, when I'm riding a bicycle, when I'm driving the car, how am I relating to God? And the answer is in the second part of the verse. where Krishna says, everyone follows my path in all respects, that's why it's Krishna. The reason is that God created, you know, if you understand that there is God, and you realize that God created everything, including all of us, then there's no way that God is not. And, you know, there's nowhere in God's creation where you can be, where you're not relating with God. You know, nowhere is not in God's creation. But there's nowhere you can go, and it's just a little bad news on there, it is. Sorry, guys. You know, try to annihilate yourself, or even if you try to commit suicide, you know? Well, you'll have to say word again, and you'll be somewhere else in God's creation. But you're still in God's creation, you can't escape it. So therefore, all that we do must be in relationship with God, with Krishna. And just like Krishna says in chapter 10, Aham Sarvasya Prabhavam Matasavam Pravartate, I'm the source of all spiritual and material worlds. Everything emanates from me. Or in other words, everything proceeds from me. And we can visualize just like a wheel, you know, like a bicycle has a wheel, it spokes, and there's a hub in the center. So it's like that. God is the center, and from him everything is coming, everything proceeds. But initially, just like when a creator creates something, an artist paints a painting, initially the painting is with the artist. You know, before it came to the gallery, when the artist paints a painting, it's with the artist, he's busy painting it. And so, just like with God, when he creates us and everything, it's with him initially. And it's our choice whether we want to stay with him or we want to do our own thing. And so if we're moving away, then it's like the wheel of the spokes, you know. As we move away from God, we turn our back on him, and we walk away from him. We're not only walking away from him, but each living entity, according to their desires, walks in a different direction. And so I mean, we're not only walking away from him, but we're walking away from each other. So therefore, not only are we losing the connection with him, in a sense, but we're also losing the connection with each other, because we choose that common connection. In our common source. So, okay, so we say, so if I turn my back on him, am I still having a relationship with him? How can I have a relationship with him? I don't want to know him. Yeah? But when you think about it, if you're having a relationship with somebody and they turn their back on you, how does it feel? Does it mean that you're not affected? It means you're affected. You feel something. You feel, you know, yeah, you feel like the person doesn't care, or so you feel hurt. So, in a sense, if you're turning your back on God, that is the relationship that you're having with God. It's saying, I want to ignore you. I want to do my own thing. So that's your relationship. It's an I want to ignore you relationship. And the reciprocation from God is, well, I'm trying to be friends with you, and I'm giving you all the opportunities, you know, to be friends with you, but at the moment, you don't want to know me, so okay, go ahead, do your own thing till you change your attitude. So, and it's interesting also that, you know, if a friend really loves you, as God does, he loves all of us, he's created us. The Creator always cares about his creation. It's not possible not to care about the thing that he's created. And, you know, especially with individuals, God creates individuals. It's not just some, you know, some painting or some book stand or something. It's an individual, he's created. So he cares about his creation. So, if you now turn around, Krishna's still got his focus on you. So it's just like, if you've got a friend, and you walk away from the friend, and you turn around, and the friend's still looking at you. As soon as you turn around and you look at the friend, it's like immediately the connection is there, because Krishna's still got his focus on you. And you turn around, and it's like, you know, immediate eye connection. So Krishna immediately reciprocates again with us. And this is why also that, you know, the ones who are connected, the self-realized souls, like Srila Prabhupada, who came to the material world to help all of us, he was constantly connected with Krishna. So he could simultaneously be in this material world and also be in the spiritual world, because he never took his focus on Krishna, so he's always connected by him. But the point that Krishna here makes is that no matter what you do, you are having a relationship with God with him. So it's like a sliding scale. You know, it's not I'm having a relationship, I'm not having a relationship. It's I'm having a relationship. What kind of relationship am I having? Am I having a, you know, we can choose to love it or we can choose to hate it. Or all the degrees in between. So all those degrees are just different degrees of relationships we have with God. It's really interesting because this always reminds me of the story of the Easter egg hunt. My mother, and our children's grandmother, she used to love doing the Easter egg hunt with the kids. In the beginning, she used to buy caravans without children. The kids hated them. So finally, she tweaked them. Hey, wait a minute, I can buy caravans, have sugar in it, they like that better. So anyway, she used to hide the Easter eggs in the garden and the Easter egg bunnies. And we, as adults, we would know where they were hidden. And okay, once they were all hidden, then the kids would come out and they would go looking for the Easter eggs. And so they're walking towards, you know, different items, you know, bushes or pipes or pot plants, and they're looking, where's the Easter egg? Where's the Easter egg? And as they walk closer, it's weird, as adults would go, warmer, oh, you're getting hot now. And then if they turn around, it would say colder. So immediately they knew, I'm walking away, I have to turn around again. So then they turn around, warmer, hot, yes, you've got it. So it's like that. Now, if we choose to ignore God and walk away from Him, then it's like a cold relationship. And if we choose to give ourselves love to God, that's a warm relationship. And Krishna says here that I reciprocate with everyone exactly as how they relate to me. And the word that Krishna uses here is tataiva, or tata eva. So, and that's translated, tata is translated as so, and eva is translated as certainly. So, basically, exactly like that. That's how I relate to you. As you relate to me, exactly like that I relate to you. And Krishna says, I reward you as you relate to me. And the word he uses is bhajani. Now, we may also recognize this word bhajani from Govinda Adi Purusham Samaha Bhajami. I worship God. So is God worshiping us? No, really the word bhajani also means honor. And in the Vedic way of proposing, when either it's interesting, I learned recently that a lady can also propose to a man, which is what I do. So, whether a lady proposes to a man or a man proposes to a lady, the type of word that they use in Vedic times is bhaj. There's this root word, root of the word bhajami is bhaj, which means like to honor. So it's basically saying, will you honor me as I'm honoring you? And that's a relationship like that. Will you relate to me if I'm relating to you? So, it's like karma. This is where karma comes in. As you sow, so shall you reap. That's karma, basically. If we plant apple trees, we can't expect pears. If we plant pumpkin seeds, we can't expect to grow tomatoes. So it's the same like that. If we're sowing indifference, I don't want to know you, God. And that's the type of reaction we get. And that reaction comes in the different experiences that we have in our lives. If we're constantly showing anger, if we're constantly being angry with things, and that's the type of experience that we have around us in our lives, angry situations. So it's not just in relationships with people, but also how you are within yourself. You may be nice with people, but if you're doing anger inside, believe me, I know, I've been there for many, many years until I actually got this, like, I used to think, like, if the tap didn't work, hit the tap, stupid tap, why did you work? And when I actually understood this point, I was like, okay, I don't have to do that anymore. Because if I keep doing it, if I keep doing this anger inside me, I'm going to experience more situations in my life where I experience anger. I have to keep going through this time and time and time again. So it's better to just drop that and just try and be nice. People and things and all sorts of situations, be kind. The kindness is coming back to you. So that's interesting. And then Krishna says, okay, so you want to be a victim? Krishna says, okay, you want to be a victim? I'll be your victim. See how you like it. See how you respond to that. But it's not a matter of malice. It's not a matter of vindictive retribution. God is not the type of a God that needs anger management calls. He's quite sane. He knows exactly what he's doing. Krishna is like putting up a big mirror. He's showing ourselves to us. You know, we choose what we want to choose. We act the way we want to act. And he's responding in kind. So in this sense, we don't blame others for whatever it is that's happening to us. Like Srila Prabhupada used to say, you cannot blame the perpetrator for bringing you your karma. It's your karma. Whatever you're experiencing, it's your karma. So Krishna's teaching us, and he's teaching us out of love. And he does it to improve us. It's like Jesus says, you know, do unto others as you would have them do unto you. So it's like that. Krishna's like, you know, okay, you want to be like this? Here, see how it feels. Experience it for yourself. See how it feels. So we finally tweak. Oh, wait a minute. Maybe I shouldn't do that anymore. So I keep going back. It's interesting. And Krishna has loved us, and he's teaching us out of love. He wants us to learn, and he wants us to grow. And he only gives us the amount of pain that we need to learn the lesson. No more, no less. And, you know, sometimes we're not okay. We may perform an act, but there's so long in the result coming. Why is that? You know? And personally, I like to think that, well, if somebody's really kind to you, they're not going to write back at you. You know, they might give you a couple of opportunities before, you know, the smack comes. Like, Krishna gives us all the time that we need for us to change our minds and understand that, oh, I really did that thing there, and maybe I shouldn't do that again. And when we really get it, you know, when we get it to the extent where we realize that we don't need to do that anymore, the karma dissolves. You have to. You know, why would you punish somebody for a lesson they've already learned? That's not, you know, that's not a very compassionate thing to do. So if the lesson is learned, there's no more need to recount it. So Krishna gives us our choice. It's we who actually set God's laws into operation, and then we get the results from that. So basically speaking, when you think about it, our only choice is, you know, to love or not to love. That's the question. You know, do we love God, or do we choose to do our own thing? And in the experience of doing all the different varieties of things that we can do for our own selfish ends, suffering the repercussions that come from that. But Krishna also loves individuality. You know, that's why he created many living entities. Because if you only want to have one experience, one type of relationship, you only create one person who does exactly the type of relationship that you want to have with him. And just keep experiencing that all over again. Right? And that'd be like watching a black and white TV with the same program going over and over and over and over and over. It'd get pretty boring. But Krishna has created unlimited living entities with all their different choices, so he can experience all the different rasas, all the different moods, all the different relationships that come from that. And this gives us a chance to offer our uniqueness to God. To offer our uniqueness to Krishna. And Krishna basically, all he needs after, all he wants is our love. He just wants to experience, you know, for us to find a unique way to offer our love to him. That's all he wants from us. It's just like the story of Brahman with the sweet rice. The Brahman wanted to offer Krishna a nice offering, but he was very poor and he didn't have anything. But he thought, okay, I'll do it within my mind. And he sat down and he closed his eyes and he meditated first, you know, on dressing the deity and then, you know, offering the foodstuffs. But before he could offer the foodstuff, he had to cook it. So he wanted to cook Krishna some nice sweet rice. So he got all the ingredients together in his mind and he put it in the pot. And he was stirring and the, you know, he put the flame on the pot and he was stirring. And then he took it out and put it in a bowl, ready to offer to Krishna. But he thought, oh gee, I better test it because if it's too hot then Krishna will burn his lips. I don't want that to happen. So he put his finger in the sweet rice and as he did that, he burnt his finger. Yeah? So this is Krishna showing that actually he's actually already accepted that service. Even though he didn't physically do it, but he wanted to do it. So he that was a direct experience for the Brahman, learning that, oh my God, actually, yeah. Even if I'm not physically doing the activity, my desire was to offer that activity to Krishna. And he really accepted. He's showing me that he accepted it. And my finger got burned. Because it's unreal. So he understood that. so real for me, it must be real for Krishna. So yeah, Krishna just wants to run. So also what we have to understand from that is if we have a particular desire to perform a particular service for God, then if the opportunity comes, we take that and we perform that service. And we, you know, we're very happy performing that service. But if the opportunity doesn't come for us to perform the service exactly in the way that we want to do it, we're actually also equally satisfied. We don't need to be upset about it, because we understand actually Krishna has actually already accepted the service because we wanted to offer it in our hearts. Krishna has actually already, you know, accepted the service, and we don't need to be upset if we don't get the opportunity to do the thing that we wanted to do exactly the way we wanted to do it. So then the real question comes, how do we make better choices? And the only way that we can make better choices is to change our mindset, raise the level of our consciousness. So if you want to have a spiritual, pure relationship with God, then you have to become more pure, because otherwise you keep making the same, you know, wrong concept of thinking mistakes. So how do we make those better choices? We become purified. And in this age of quarrel and hypocrisy, which is called Kali Yuga, the process, the best process for purification is chanting the holy name of God. And the holy name of God has been kindly given to us through Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu with the Maha Mantra. It's Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So just before the class, we have a wonderful kirtan. And, you know, we often say to each other, nothing like a good kirtan, you think? Nothing is satisfying like a good kirtan. It's just like, you know, every desire we have just drops away. You just want to be there. That's all you want to do. You just want to chant God's name. Totally satisfying, completely satisfying. Why is that? Why is it so satisfying? Because God is everything. And what you're doing when you're chanting God's name is no different from God himself. So what you're doing when you're chanting is you are vibrating God's own frequency. It's like, you're there, you're with him, he's there with you. Why would you want to go anywhere else? So this purifies our consciousness. So we chant to purify our consciousness, and we must be pure before we can enter into the spiritual world. You know? Before we go into the spiritual dimension, you can't go back if there's any change of material desires. It's not like, if only I would have won that $80 million last week, then I would have been really happy. We don't know, the big Powerball went up last week, $18 million. But that's not the way it is. You know, when you go back to the spiritual world, it's not like you're then going to be up there looking back, if only I would have married that person, or if only would I have had the opportunity to live in Bali, which we recently visited and loved very much. It's not like that. Once you get back to the spiritual world, the only way you can even get there is if there's no more desires for anything else than to be in that purified spiritual atmosphere where all you do is you have relationships with God, you chant your holy name, you do his service, and you work in the association of devotees. No more anxiety. So Krishna is saying here in this verse that no matter what you do, you are in relationship with him. And no matter what you do, you are following his path. Because, you know, whatever you do, you are setting his laws into motion. That's how you're following his path. And he has set it up like this for you to benefit from, so that eventually we come to our senses and we love him voluntarily. Krishna says in chapter 9, that whatever you do, whatever you eat, whatever you offer or sacrifice or give away, do that as an offering to me. So after hearing this verse that, you know, we've just thought about and talked about, we can now understand this other verse: whatever you do, whatever you eat, whatever you offer or give away, do that as an offering to me. We can also understand that verse at a deeper level. Because what Krishna here is saying is, everything you do and offer and give away, it already is an offering to me. Krishna has just said that everything you do is a relationship to me. So then the question is you have to make sure that whatever you do is worthy of offering. So in relationship with people, how you deal with people, you know, how you drive the bus, how you clean the table at your home. It's all in relationship with Krishna. Therefore, you know, we need to choose the right activities within the principles of religion, and we need to do it with love and devotion and gratitude. Thank you very much. I'm just wondering if anybody has any questions. So there was a bit of grass that was coming in. Everybody understands? Hi, we're all going back to others. Mark, any questions? No? Bernie? Any challenges? Go on. Yes.
How easy is it to go back
home
to God?
It's as easy as just chanting the holy name once with pure intentions. Krishna will accept us back just like that. The thing that makes it hard, it makes it hard for us is our conditioning. That's what makes it hard. We're so conditioned to thinking that we have to do things in the material world, just have a pure body. This is what we can think about, you know? We need to, first step of going back to God is understanding, I'm not this body. Well, that's okay to say, I'm not this body. You hear it so often, I'm not this body. So what does it mean? What am I then? That's what we have to focus on. It's just like when you want to reach the top of a mountain and you're climbing to the top. Not the first thing they always say, don't look back, don't look down. You keep looking down. You're going to fall, yeah? So you have to keep your focus on the goal that you're trying to reach. That's the whole idea. Keep your focus on Krishna. And, you know, keep yourself busy with activities that you can do and think of God at that time. So it's as easy as making the connection. The difficulty is that condition. That's what we have to get through.
Well,
any person who has started the spiritual process is constantly, or should be constantly, analyzing themselves. And, you know, from this verse what Krishna's saying here, I relate to you exactly as you relate to me. We can utilize that verse as anything that's happening in our lives, we can then analyze, why did that happen to me? You know, usually we say, why did that happen to me? And we blame some external thing. It's his fault, it's her fault, their fault, they did it to me. Somebody yelled at me, their fault! But actually, if we analyze it, we can utilize this process to analyze. If I'm experiencing this, I've caused it. Why? I've caused it through my consciousness. That's why it's happening to me. Krishna says, not a blade of grass moves without his sanction. Nothing is by accident. Everything happens for a reason. And the reason for us to experience the wrong way of thinking that we've had in the past. That's why we're experiencing what we experience. So if somebody yelled at me, okay, I might initially react and yell back. No, Bernie. Then I have to actually take responsibility. It's actually very liberating to know this. This is the biggest secret, you know? That it's actually very empowering to know that whatever I experience has come to me, through my own consciousness. I've caused this thing, this experience to happen to me because I've had some wrong consciousness somewhere. So then the next question is, why did I feel that I need to experience this? And when you start analyzing yourself in that way, you immediately take responsibility. Oh, Krishna is showing me something here. What is it? What do I need to learn? And then the answer will come, you know. And the answer came, well, somebody yelled at me because internally I've been yelling. There's been some screaming happening inside me, dissatisfaction, that come from them. And the worst thing they can actually do is react way out back. So what are you doing? And here we're doing the Bible. You didn't know your lesson, and you're doing it again. Is that and of course, you know, the process is chanting Hare Krishna alongside what you're doing. When you're chanting Hare Krishna, you purify your mind. And with the intention that, you know, sometimes, you know, it's difficult to chant your mind because we are so conditioned. So the process sometimes that I want to use is to make ourselves humble before God. So sometimes I start when I chant around, you know, I know I'm not qualified to chant Krishna's holy name, I'm a conditioned soul. Who am I? But I start with, you know, I'm sorry, Lord. I've offended you in so many ways, I'm sorry. And then, you know, please forgive me. As I'm chanting, you know, start with that. And then, you know, thank you for giving me the opportunity to chant your holy name. Thank you. And then that gratefulness comes into your heart, you know. As you're thanking somebody, you become grateful. And gratefulness is actually the next feeling to love. So if you can be grateful first, then it's easy to jump to love from there. And then you can start chanting your answer from feeling of love. And then that will increase. I'm getting somebody pulling the hook out and saying, you're fine with this. So, thank you very much.